Even if the reference to me had been true, it would not have been to my discredit, for America is built upon the little fellows who made good. Palomar Gardens was far from a hamburger stand, for it had been twice publicized in Holiday magazine. I am going to relate a few more of the stories that have been circulated against me. It will not be easy to see how intelligent people could originate such absurd stories, much less get people to believe them. Many people seem to be looking for such things as these and spread them around, knowing that many will believe it as gospel truth. If they hear of something that may give me a small boost in public opinion, they either discard it or distort it to suit their own purposes. The editor of a National Saucer magazine claimed a few months ago that I submitted a manuscript to him in 1944. In the manuscript, I supposedly depicted Jesus Christ coming to Earth in a spaceship. He insinuated that I rewrote the story in 1952 and renamed the pilot Orson. Nothing could be farther from the truth. In 1944 I knew nothing about spacecraft or space people. I was too busy helping to clear land on the slopes of Mount Palomar to do any writing of any kind. I respect the name of Jesus Christ too highly to use it in that manner. Anyone using the name of Christ in that manner is a blasphemer and has little or no respect for the name. For the hundreds who are using his name for financial gain, I have no respect whatsoever. Another time it was reported that I had died and my daughter was running the business. This in spite of the fact that in 37 years of married life, my wife and I had no children at all. At 12:15 a.m., on the morning of August 8, 1959, it was reported by a visitor on an all-night radio program that, in my earlier years, I was a spiritualist who claimed to materialize Venusians who performed appendectomies upon patients. One of my co-workers wrote a letter to the MC of the program requesting an on-the-air interview to correct the wild falsehoods, but was not granted even the courtesy of a reply. For the past 7 years, certain groups have tried to discredit my photographs. At the same time they have published them in their psychic magazines, and scientific laboratories have used them as a guide in constructing prototype spacecraft. I can at least thank them all for acknowledging that I existed. Many are making a good living from their writings. What would they write about if I had not shared my experiences? Be it a brochure or the large papers, I can be thankful to them for keeping what I represent before the public, for they create a curiosity that makes people want to know what space is all about. The opposition sponsored much adverse publicity, but the program of knowledge would not have been broadcast throughout the world today if it had not been for the opposition's unknowing assistance. 9. What I have learned from interplanetarians. Through the years since I first met Orson on a California desert, I have had many meetings with our space-traveling friends. Some have been very casual and unexpected. Others I expected, much as I described in Inside the Spaceships. Never have I been able to make definite appointments with them for a specific time and place, nor have I outgrown the inner exaltation of being in their company. However, even though I have had so many meetings with them, it would be as foolish for me to say that I know all who are on Earth, as it would be to say that I know everybody in any city or town. I have been told that on many occasions I have been visited by and talked with space travelers without recognizing them, and without their identifying themselves. On a few occasions, I have later met one or two on a ship whom I recognized as having talked with previously, without recognition. It is for this reason that I have so often said and written that many people, in fact untold numbers of people, have met and talked with space travelers without recognizing them. Many work in industries and government positions throughout the world. They may also be found in the armed forces of every nation, working in divisions of science, communications, medical corps, etc., where they are not required to be trained for slaughter of their fellowmen. I have been asked endless times how this can be, when so many personal identifications are required of everyone nowadays. These are not insurmountable problems even to Earth's people. There are innumerable ways in which identifications can be established. If one questions this statement, let him start an investigation into the matter, and he may uncover many surprises for himself. Often the space people are recognized as being above the average in their natural friendliness, and slowness to anger, and at times in their telepathic abilities. But since telepathy is a science in which many people on Earth have developed an interest, with more or less success in using, the space people in business are usually shrugged off as just good telepathists, or as having extremely strong hunches. Let me here give a warning to the reader not to think everybody who uses telepathy, or follows his hunches or feeling impressions, is a space visitor. Keep balanced in all ways and accept a man for what he is, not as a possible god, as so may have catalogued the space people. Since the publication of Inside the Spaceships, people throughout the world have turned to virtual worship of our visitors from other planets. I have received innumerable letters from those who want to meet them and be taken to another planet where they might evade the lessons of Earth. This was not at all the purpose of the book. As I have said, many of our meetings have been very casual. We would discuss Earth and her people, along with some of the problems we have created for ourselves, the same as you and I might do over a cup of coffee or a glass of beer. In Inside the Spaceships it was said that, even under the best of conditions, man sometimes develops a tendency toward arrogance, in spite of having been taught its penalties. This continues to take place occasionally throughout the cosmos, on even the most highly developed planet of which we can conceive. Since universal law forbids man to destroy man, such people are still moved to more lowly planets where they may experience the penalty they have been taught awaits the arrogant, for it is a characteristic of mankind to remember better lessons learned through experience than by other methods of instruction. Earth long ago was chosen as the planet in our system to which such people were moved. But let me make clear one important point. Because of this statement, many readers jumped to the conclusion that Earth is nothing more than a penal colony, and her inhabitants have little chance for joy and happiness. This is erroneous. It is the working out of the law and not personal decisions of other people. This point has been made very clear to me by the space people, whose understanding and compassion far surpass our limited conception. Our Earth was formed by the same Creator who built all the planets, suns and satellites that form endless numbers of systems throughout the cosmos. One sun is as holy as any place in the entire universe. Earth is even more beautiful than many planets whose inhabitants have overcome destructive attitudes and have advanced socially and scientifically beyond us. If man would take the time and effort to observe the beauty of nature wherever he might be, he could not help but recognize the many blessings bestowed upon Earthlings by the great Creator. Even in the largest cities there are museums and parks with flowers, birds, trees, and even little insects of all kinds. These are all very beautiful if one will only take a few minutes to observe any one of them closely. Yet we have become so engrossed with the effort of living, and quite often with the passion for obtaining possessions, that greed has overtaken us and we turn our interests toward destruction of many kinds of little creatures. On the other hand, people on Venus who have studied nature closely have learned that all that natural forms are created for a definite purpose, therefore they do not use poison sprays, artificial fertilizers, etc. They have learned, as we are learning, that while certain insects are destroyed through poisons, others just as destructive, in the absence of their natural enemies, multiply prolifically. Subsequently, birds too become victims of their natural food being poisoned. In order to help maintain a balance of fertility, small life forms were created. Because these eat a certain percentage of crops and plants, we now poison them, and today mankind is paying a heavy price in health. Thus our lack of understanding of natural principles and causes, along with the greed to get all we can for our money and effort, has led us into a war with nature. We have set up a chain reaction which, when traced, will be found to affect all life from the lowly insect to man himself. Instead of the artificial fertilizers which have become so popular in our world, the farmers on Venus return to their earth a certain percentage of nature's produce for mulching and fertilizing. To avoid bleeding the land of its fertility, they practice rotation of crops, and give their land periodic rests. As a result of this care, the food they grow contains all the natural elements so vital for good health. Points of this type have been brought out to me repeatedly, not in reprimand but as an analysis for many of the health conditions now existing on Earth that were not prevalent before poison wars were started against nature's little creatures. When we return to a study of nature, we too will learn that all things were created for a specific purpose. Because we have turned our interests away from the underlying cause of so many things, and have become absorbed in materialism, we have brought upon ourselves many conditions from which we must suffer until we return to nature, understand her ways and purposes, and adjust our ways to conform with her principles. Our planet is but one classroom. Here are lessons to be learned that can be found in no other planet in our system. There are, however, many duplicates of our system throughout the billions of galaxies comprising the cosmos, as there are duplicates of systems lower in development than ours, and others higher. But as a child cannot solve the problems of a college man until he has learned the lessons of grammar and high schools, thus preparing himself for the college work, so man cannot skip rungs on the ladder of life, avoiding certain lessons along the highway of progression. We might compare Earth with a kindergarten where children of many personalities are gathered in work and play. Here will be found the arrogant, aggressive type, the timid, the introvert and extrovert, the patient and the impatient, the kind and the cruel. It is the purpose of the kindergarten classes to teach these individuals to blend harmoniously with one another. In such a manner, self-control is established and group coordination can be brought about. Here too are taught primary principles in the purpose and operation of the body as a channel of expression of universal life and intelligence, the origin and power of thoughts, with the effects they can have on an individual and his surroundings is also learned. With increased understanding comes greater appreciation, joys and accomplishments. Instead of recognizing the lessons our planet has for its people, we have been taught through the centuries that the human race is peculiar to Earth alone. As a result, rules have been set up by which we live without considering, or trying to learn, of vaster rules existing throughout the cosmos. The space travelers are as interested in us, our ways of thinking and acting, as any humanitarian would be. They come so that they might help us learn the universal laws of life, as a teacher works with her pupils. A successful teacher never talks down to his students. Through understanding their minds and manner of thinking, he endeavors to help the younger ones unfold intellectually. The space visitors serve in this same manner. They do not impose themselves upon us, nor do they take a superior attitude toward us. Rather, realizing that we do not understand the laws involved in our thoughts and acts, they live amongst us, hoping that, by their example of harmonious living, they can instill in us a desire to do the same. I shall never forget the numbers of people who have visited me, loudly expressing their desire to get out of this hell on Earth, to live in the peace and happiness of Venus. Yet when I asked these same people if they were willing to live as the Venusians, they were not. They did not want to give up their pet likes and dislikes. They like to feel that, for one reason or another, they are better than a fellow being who may not have had the same education, may be of a different color of skin or religion, or may not have been so successful in a business and financial way. Still, it is likes and dislikes of this kind that keep mankind on Earth divided against itself. There are no such divisions on Venus, although these same differences of color and intellectual unfoldment, even of occupation, exist there as here. So if such people were taken there, with their present attitudes, they would find an even greater hell than here, because they would be alone with their likes and dislikes until they willingly freed themselves from them. There are those people on Earth who glory in their jurisdiction over others. These too would find themselves very unhappy on a planet where all are considered equal, where one entrusted with authority over others in an educational or community capacity must be the most humble servant among his fellowmen. This, of course, demands a condition of the heart, a love such as comparatively few on Earth have grown into. One cannot learn this lesson through books, only through living. And Earth is where man is given the opportunity to learn such living, among others who are learning the same lessons. On Earth there are those who feel a possessiveness over other members of their families, or perhaps of friends or acquaintances. Often such people feel it is entirely within their rights to dictate the acts and even the thoughts of others. People on Venus, on the other hand, never take such an attitude. They recognize each person's inherent freedom, granted by the Creator, and although one may not think or act in accordance with another's ideas, humility and compassion compel individuals to permit all others the liberty of their divine birthright. The humble man sees all persons as equals, children of the same Creator, breathing the same breath of life, enjoying food from the same earth, sustained by the same sunshine and by the light of the same moon. Each person is born for a purpose of serving, as well as learning. No one can perfectly fill another's position because each has traveled his own path along which he has arrived at the present with its apparent condition. The people on other planets are doing the same as we. They too are traveling the pathway of life, learning lessons every day. At times they discover that they have not built a foundation with which to stand the stresses and strains put upon the average man by our way of life. These have to return to their planet, and, if through the passing of time they reach the point where they must learn through experience the lessons of our world, they will have to be born here in order to build a foundation through which they may learn them. Others, who have grown sufficiently in understanding and control of themselves, are able to meet the problems of everyday life on Earth in a calm manner without being overcome by them. Many of the meetings I have had with our visitors have dealt mostly with my own problems and possible solutions. While they never advise a fellow man, they have an inexplicable ability of passing thoughts to another in such a way that he believes them to be his own. Thus he is free to accept and follow them, or discard them without the thought that someone else advised him. I had to learn this myself as I carefully studied my thoughts and acts following meetings with them. Often I found myself going exactly opposite to thoughts that I had received, all because I had not understood. It takes considerable schooling of oneself in this respect, and I still have a long way to go before I have mastered this lesson. Another thing I have noticed about the space visitors: they love fun, singing, dancing, sports of all kinds, movies and educational programs on instruments comparable to our radio and TV. Yet they are always quiet. They do not talk a lot because, as they have explained, much effort is expended in talking. A great percentage of everyday talk on Earth is idle waste of time that enervates not only the speaker but others in his presence. Many people talk incessantly and loudly only because of nervous energy which they do not understand. Few people on our planet understand themselves, or have ever taken the time, thought and effort to gain such understanding. If we are to grow as we should, preparing ourselves for life in another classroom of the cosmos, we will have to begin taking more interest in understanding our thoughts and their effects upon us as well as others, turning our minds toward the source of these thoughts and the reasons we allow them to possess us. In reality, we should be the masters of our thoughts, yet how many of us are? I have been asked many times to describe the way of life on other planets, their homes, their interests, detailed conditions of all kinds. This is as impossible as it would be to describe the people and conditions in the entire world after one has met only a mere handful of people. Through the years I have met individuals from many of our neighboring planets. From their personal appearances I could not tell any of them from ordinary Earthmen. Most of those whom I have met have come from Venus, so I have been told more about that planet than the others. On each planet a planetary language is spoken, rather than many languages as on Earth. Yet that of each planet differs from all others. So when space travelers visit from one planet to another, they take the interest and effort to learn the language spoken in the world they are to visit. Even so, this is not so difficult as coming to Earth and having to learn many languages if they hope to travel from one country to another. All planets have land masses, islands, continents and bodies of water, much like ours. Some have more water than others, but water must be present to support atmosphere and life. Education on our neighboring planets begins at birth. A newborn child is observed lovingly and carefully to learn its thought patterns and its natural interests. This does not mean that it has the privilege of ruling the home, as so often occurs on Earth. From the beginning, a child is taught the value and rewards of humility, consideration for others and the indescribable joy of loving and being loved. He is taught that his natural beauty and talents are gifts from the Creator to be used as a privilege. Our neighbors in space have certain principles by which to live. These are the foundation upon which a child's life is based, and upon which adults, for the most part, strive to adhere. These are: 1. To desire no more than is actually needed for daily health and comfort. 2. To look upon all people as equals, without favoritism to any. 3. To watch and control their thoughts, keeping them universal at all times. This, with them as with us, is a great problem to which they keep ever alert. They do not always succeed, because they too have emotions which they have not entirely mastered. But when they catch themselves erring, those who have not turned into the detour of egotism immediately change to the universal aspect, looking upon their error as a lesson to be remembered and not to be repeated. 4. To appreciate and give thanks to every form for service rendered. This begins with each new day which they greet with pleasure and enthusiasm for opportunities it may present to serve the Creator. As they have studied themselves, their thoughts and their impressions, they have learned to accept and act upon them in their purity rather than distorting them with biased reasoning as we are so prone to do. Thus the works of their hands express a beauty of natural radiation not found on earth. Their stones, metals and minerals are no different from ours in this world, but their natural resonance is higher because of the absence of the negative attitudes so prevalent on earth. Homes in different parts of Venus are constructed for comfort and according to natural conditions, the same as they are here. There is a variety of architectural styles, as one would normally expect from a multitude of people. Their homes are no larger than is required for comfort and pleasure. Some families, because of their interests, prefer homes with lawns, flowers, swimming pools, etc., the same as we enjoy. There are others who prefer smaller quarters without so much responsibility. Accommodations are available for such preferences. One important difference their precepts of life have established from our earthly ways, is their friendliness. One does not have to be invited to enjoy another's swimming pool or lawn and garden, for instance, because all are considered friends and welcomed as such. The conveniences are not privately owned, but open for the pleasure of all. As on earth, businesses of various kinds are a necessity for the welfare and comfort of the people. Buildings must be constructed. Factories of all kinds are necessary to supply manufactured products. Farmers cultivate land to produce food. Shops, varying in size and style, accommodate the shopper. Trained workers keep public utilities and equipment in repair, since any man-made object is subject to flaws and breakdown. The power they use is the same natural energy used in their ships, therefore, smoke and dirt are not produced, as is true of our power. Yet nature has her storms there as here, and there are few, if any, differences between dust particles of Venus and those of Earth. They have solved the cleaning problem better than we have, however. In each building, home, business, etc., is built a magnetic suction system to draw floating particles of dust into a central container before they have an opportunity to settle. These containers are collected regularly, taken to a reclamation plant where the contents are processed to reclaim valuable minerals, much as fumes from our large factories and mills are trapped to extract usable elements for manufacturing byproducts. For the housewife, cooking is simple and easy. Most of the food is eaten in its natural state. That which they cook is quickly and simple prepared so as to retain vital minerals which would be washed away by the kind of soaking that is so often done by earthly housewives, then quickly cooked with a penetrating ray. Similar equipment is now being developed in our world and will be put on the market for our homemakers. I have not learned about the matter of dishwashing, which seems to be such an obstacle in the minds of many earth people. Venusians keep their clothes clean by use of a process similar to our ultrasonic methods. By putting garments into a cabinet, they are cleaned better than by use of water or any of our solvents. The fabric is refreshed into its original state of newness through this method, thus increasing life and permitting it to retain its natural beauty. This process is used in cleaning all fabric, and takes only about 3 minutes. All homes and public places like hotels, are equipped with one or more of these cabinets, varying in size according to the need. As on Earth, there are those creative men and women who delight in styling and making clothes. Some do this for the general public, others for their families and friends who do not share such interests or talents. They never allow their work to become a burden to them. This is because of their mental attitude and control over their thoughts. They have learned to enjoy thoroughly whatever they set themselves to do. We could do the same, if we wanted to, and would set ourselves toward this end. Admittedly, it is difficult, but not impossible. Because of their excellent community transportation systems, and their desire not to possess more than they actually need, few people own private vehicles. They realize, as many of our people are beginning to, that possessions can become the masters, with their owners being possessed and bound with extra cares, work and expenses. True, they have robots to do much of the heavy work that once was done by manual labor. These have given the laborers more time for study and the pleasure of living. Still, it does take the mind of man to conceive and design machines of all kinds, and to maintain such equipment. Man, as he turns his thoughts into forms, becomes a creator. Learning is a matter of a lifetime, never limited to a few short years in school. Their schools are edifices of beauty, within which is taught the science of living. Many other sciences are also taught, with models depicting the history of their planet, civilizations that have come and gone, as well as history of other planets within our system, and systems beyond ours. I was interested in the explanation they gave of the Garden of Eden as described in our Bible. This was a word picture of what results when man permits his reason to separate him from an awareness of that eternal part of himself which we have named the soul. The cosmic man, unit of the creative force and intelligence, builds the physical body and enables it to grow and express. So long as man abides in the consciousness of this eternal part of himself, he never grows old, nor does he experience tensions or strains of any kind. But when the reasoning mind, or personality ego, takes over, judgments enter and divisions are established which eventually lead to man's downfall, and eventual destruction of that era of civilization. The story of Adam and Eve is allegorical, depicting the history of mankind. When man is aware of his true being, his lot is happiness, but when personal emotions, the tempter of greeds, envies, etc., are allowed to rule him, he is taken out of his Garden of Eden into the world of hardships established by the ego. The story of the prodigal son's return is a portrayal of man being humbled through hardships, turning again to an awareness of his true status as the child of the infinite creator, and the peace and joys that such awareness bring to their possessor. Much teaching is done by means of systems similar to our radio and TV. Demonstrations are given of miniature solar systems in the process of being formed, while others are experiencing disintegration. Cosmic laws, as learned through observation with telescopic instruments on the planet as well as in their space travels, are taught with the aid of replicas built for use in their schools. Classes are not established by ages, but by interest of the people. No one is pushed beyond his interest, nor is anyone held back in his progress by a prevailing average. This may all sound pointless to us who have grown accustomed to our system of education, but on a planet where interest is a stimulant for greater understanding of that which is limitless, no monotony or indifference is allowed to rule a person. There are no separate churches, as we have them, for their day-by-day living incorporates what we might term their religion. With their attitudes and understanding of universal laws, there can be no divisions as between religious teaching and daily living, for in the house of the Creator there is eternal blending of all things. One studies to learn that he might more fully live according to the will of the infinite and thereby progress along the pathway of eternal life. Little ones are taught in their homes, as well as in such public institutions. One never grows so old as to stop attending classes of instruction. Periodic travel on their planet and elsewhere through the cosmos in their gigantic luxury space liners is enjoyed by every individual on Venus, regardless of age. They have learned well that, although one can learn much through study of records and miniature replicas, travel is a source of unending practical education which gives not only pleasure but lessons of lasting value, never forgotten. People on Venus know no disease of mind or body, as they are free of tensions, such as are created by our personality divisions, likes and dislikes, and judgments of one kind or another. This was told in Inside the Spaceships.